You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. In today's show, Jordan vows revenge for the murder of a Jordanian pilot by Islamic State militants. The UN names an American judge as the new head of a controversial inquiry into alleged Gaza war crimes. And we'll tell you why the World Food Program is appealing for help in dealing with floods in Malawi. I'm Michael Lippin. Jordan's military says it will seek revenge against Islamic State militants who released an internet video on Tuesday, appearing to show them burning alive a Jordanian pilot whom they had captured. News agencies quoted security sources as saying that in the coming hours, Jordan planned to execute a detained Iraqi woman whose release the militants had demanded in exchange for the Jordanian pilot. The woman, Sajida al-Rashawi, has been on death row for her role in a 2005 suicide bombing in Amman. Jordanian King Abdullah, who was visiting Washington, said the killing of the pilot, Muath al-Kaza Azbay, will make his nation more united. U.S. President Barack Obama said that if proven authentic, the video is one more indication of what he called the Islamic State's viciousness and barbarity.
I think we'll redouble the vigilance and determination on the part of a global coalition to make sure that they are degraded and ultimately defeated.
Kaza Azbay had been flying on a mission for a U.S.-led coalition fighting the Islamic State when he was captured in December after his fighter jet crashed into a Syrian region controlled by the militants. Hundreds of Chadian ground troops have entered northeastern Nigeria as part of a growing regional offensive against Boko Haram Islamist insurgents. Witnesses said Chadian soldiers and vehicles crossed from Cameroon into the Nigerian town of Gambaru on Tuesday. A Nigerian government spokesman told VOA that Chadian forces were operating under a bilateral agreement allowing them to pursue terrorists into Nigerian territory. The U.S. military says it has carried out a drone strike in Somalia targeting a senior leader of the Al-Shabaab Islamist militant group. A U.S. defense official said Tuesday the drone strike targeted Al-Shabaab's chief of external operations and intelligence planning, Youssef Deek. The official said the U.S. attack was carried out south of the capital Mogadishu on Saturday. He did not confirm the results of the strike, but said that if successful, it would be a significant blow to the terrorist group. French authorities say a knife-wielding assailant has attacked three French soldiers guarding a Jewish community center in the southern city of Nice. Two of the French servicemen were wounded in Tuesday's assault. The attacker was arrested. French President François Hollande condemned what he called a criminal act and promised an investigation. The soldiers were on patrol outside the Jewish center as part of stepped-up security measures in France. Last month, Islamist militants carried out deadly attacks in Paris, targeting the offices of the Charlie Hebdo satirical magazine and a Jewish kosher grocery. The United Nations says a UN inquiry into possible Israeli war crimes committed last year in Gaza will proceed, despite the resignation of the chief investigator and opposition to the inquiry from Israel's prime minister. The world body says American judge Mary McGowan Davis will serve as the new head of the Independent Commission of Inquiry on Gaza, replacing William Shabas. Robert Berger has more from Jerusalem.
Shabas is an outspoken critic of Israel and had previously offered consultancy services to the Palestinian Liberation Organization, or PLO. Israeli officials accused Shabas of anti-Israel bias, and they refused to cooperate with the UN inquiry. Shabas explained his decision to resign on Israel Radio.
Time is very important now. There are only a few weeks left before the commission inquiry finishes its work, and I was becoming an obstacle and a distraction to the work of the commission.
During the 50-day Gaza conflict between Israel and the Islamic militant group Hamas, more than 2,200 Palestinians and 72 Israelis were killed. The UN says two-thirds of the Palestinian casualties were civilians. Israel denies allegations of war crimes, saying it was acting in legitimate self-defense against Palestinian rocket attacks and that Hamas used civilians as human shields. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Fighting between Ukraine's military and Russian-backed Ukrainian separatists has killed at least eight civilians in eastern Ukraine. Kiev and rebel officials said at least 22 people also were wounded in the battles late Monday and on Tuesday. Ukraine's military also reported the deaths of five of its soldiers in the fighting. The top UN court has ruled that neither Croatia nor Serbia committed genocide during the 1990s Balkan Wars, when Croatia broke away from the former Serbian-dominated Federation of Yugoslavia. Tuesday's ruling by the International Court of Justice said many crimes had been committed by Croatian and Serbian forces, but neither side had proven that the other committed genocide during the Balkan conflict, which killed more than 20,000 people. The World Food Program says it is scaling up humanitarian operations in Malawi, which has been suffering its worst flooding in 15 years. Lisa Schlein has the story.
Aid agencies have been trying to help the more than 600,000 people affected by the flooding since Malawi's president declared 15 of the country's 28 districts a disaster. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers tells VOA many people living in the worst flood-affected places and in remote areas are extremely difficult to reach.
Roads, bridges are damaged or washed away. Some flooded areas remain cut off from markets and food supplies. WFP has one helicopter which arrived in the country on the 23rd of January to support delivery of food and also to transport humanitarian relief cargo. We would need an additional helicopter, a special four-wheel drive fleet, and also boats.
The agency says it urgently needs $17.5 million for its expanded flood relief operation in Malawi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
British lawmakers have taken a step toward making Britain the first country in the world to allow the creation of babies with DNA from three people. The House of Commons voted on Tuesday to approve a controversial type of in vitro fertilization that could prevent mothers from passing to their babies inherited health problems such as serious heart and brain disorders and muscular dystrophy. But critics of the procedure say it is a step toward the creation of designer babies. The British House of Lords still must approve the measure in the coming weeks before the law could take effect next year. Well, that's it for International Edition on the Voice of America. Join us again at 0330 Universal Time for an expanded look at the latest world news. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington.
This is Business News on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. U.S. stocks rallied for a second day, rebounding from the biggest monthly drop in a year for the Standard & Poor's 500 index as a surge in energy stocks spread to the broader market. ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation climbed more than 3% as Brent crude entered a bull market. The S&P 500 added 1.4% to close at 2049, climbing above its average level for the past 50 days. The Dow Jones Industrial Average also rising almost 305 points or 1.8% to close at 17,666. Oil prices Tuesday headed for the biggest four-day advance since January 2009 as a tumbling dollar sent commodities rallying.
Standard & Poor's is paying about $1.38 billion to settle government allegations that it knowingly inflated its ratings of risky mortgage investments that helped trigger the financial markets. That, according to the U.S. Justice Department, the settlement with the U.S. government, 19 states, and the District of Columbia covers ratings issued from 2004 through 2007 by the McGraw-Hill subsidiary. It resolves a court fight that began with a government lawsuit 2 years ago and involved dozens of depositions and hundreds of millions of documents. Under this agreement, S&P admits that it issued and confirmed positive ratings despite knowing that those assessments were unjustified and in many cases based on packages of mortgages that it knew were likely to default.
Coke is coming out with premium milk that has more protein and less sugar than regular. It's betting people will pay twice as much for it. The national rollout of Fairlife over the next several weeks marks Coca-Cola's entry into the milk case in the U.S. It's one way that the world's biggest beverage maker is diversifying its offerings. That's a look at business news on VOA Global.
So you're going to pay twice as much for a quart or a liter of milk?
I don't know. Maybe if it has carbonation in it.
Carbonated milk?
Wouldn't you pay twice as much for that?
No. I mean, well, that's...
Onward.
There's something called a chocolate egg cream that they serve in New York City, and that's supposed to be carbonated milk, but
ew.
It never really is, and it never was
a no, I don't think that was
whatsoever.
A good move.
Stay with us. This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Dogs have been called man's best friend, but communication between the species is limited because dogs can't talk. However, researchers have developed a sensitive computer interface that improves two-way communication between a dog and his handler. VOA's Jessica Berman is in the cafe with a story of a device that has applications for everything from search and rescue dogs to training household pets.
A couple of dog lovers who happen to be scientists at North Carolina State University have figured out a way to communicate with dogs. It's not a verbal conversation. It's more tactile. They developed a comfortable harness with a small computer mounted on it that allows dog owners to detect from a distance what Fido is doing and feeling, according to David Roberts.
This involves outfitting this harness with a bunch of sensors that are dedicated to monitoring the environment that the dog is in, as well as monitoring the dog itself, and then also being able to send inputs back to the dog via haptics, so gentle vibrations, much like you would feel when your cell phone goes off in your pocket.
The harness, which can record a dog's heartbeat and temperature and measure its activity level, is controlled wirelessly through a cell phone app. Roberts, a mathematician and computer scientist at NC State, says the device runs two programs and has a number of potential applications. One is to use it with service dogs that guide sight-impaired people. These dogs, says Roberts, are particularly vulnerable to stress, even though they're trained to remain very calm. The high-tech harness can also be used on search and rescue dogs and military dogs trained to locate explosives.
They're running out and they catch a whiff of something. They could be out at several hundred yards working away from the handlers, and the handler could get a little beep on a handheld device saying, hey, your dog is on some scent.
The beep on a cell phone tells the handler that a dog has laid down in front of a scent, as they are trained to do. The harness can be customized with environmental sensors that can detect hazards such as gas leaks, as well as a camera and microphone for collecting additional information. Haptic vibrations can also send precisely timed signals from the handler to help train a dog. Roberts and his colleagues are in the process of miniaturizing the computer and improving the physiological sensors so the harness can be used in animal shelters and hospitals. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Fossils from California's La Brea tar pits keep supplying scientists with excellent material for studying the region's past. Ancient animals, from mammoths to tiny insects, reveal facts about climate changes during the last ice age and help scientists understand the modern climate. VOA's George Putich is here in the cafe with us.
For millennia, natural tar that seeped from the ground in what is now Southern California trapped large and small animals, preserving their fossils and providing scientists with a trove of specimens suitable for study. A researcher at La Brea Tar Pits Museum, Anna Holden, is analyzing fossilized bees to learn about the ancient environment.
I'm trying to reconstruct what the climate was like and also what the local habitat. But this bee offered kind of unprecedented information in a way.
Exposing the fossils in a micro CT scanner, scientists discovered that the bee's habitat was warmer than expected, which led them to conclude that at the end of the Ice Age, about 11,500 years ago, this area was not covered with snow and ice as previously thought. Holden says that unlike the large mammals that came to La Brea from South America or across the Bering Strait, insects' limited range allows the collection of detailed information about their immediate environment. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Please join us every day at VOAnews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. The 15th century painter Piero di Cosimo is sometimes overshadowed by his more famous contemporaries in the Italian Renaissance, guys named Leonardo da Vinci and Botticelli. But a new exhibit here in Washington brings Piero to the forefront. Known for his ability to adapt his style, di Cosimo's work shows the influence of Netherlandish painting, with its attention to detail, realism of fabrics and brighter colors, and incorporation of flora and background. Dennis Geronimus is an associate professor of art history at New York University and one of the exhibit's co-curators. He told the Associated Press that di Cosimo offers something for everyone.
He, I think, comes across as an artist who doesn't just speak one visual language, but many. And on the one hand, he's full of the unexpected and the fantastic, the improbable. On the other hand, he also speaks a very human language, one that one could describe best as a visual vernacular. So even the most solemn of compositions are filled with little particles of the lived, of the everyday.
Geronimus says that Piero di Cosimo had a unique gift for making art more accessible by incorporating objects and themes in his work that even common, uneducated people would recognize.
He has a gift for making the ordinary seem extraordinary. And he, at the same time, invests the extraordinary, in the case of both the pious and the pagan, with little hints of everyday life to make them all the more immediate and to draw the viewer in, both then and now.
One of the paintings featured is the Visitation with St. Nicholas and St. Anthony Abbot. In the altarpiece, the pregnant Virgin Mary is visited by her cousin Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. The two saints are seated in the foreground, with Nicholas wearing a bright red robe, while Anthony, the man regarded as the father of Christian monasticism, wears a green cape and spectacles. The background features images from the Gospels. The birth of Christ in a stable is shown to the left. The Magi are in the deep background. Behind St. Anthony, the slaughter of the innocents told of in Matthew's Gospel is portrayed. And even the Annunciation appears on the wall of a distant church. Gretchen Hirschauer is one of the co-curators of this exhibit. She says that the Visitation illustrates di Cosimo's style.
Even though it's one central scene, the Visitation, Piero invites you into the panel. He leads the eye of the worshiper, of the spectator, throughout the picture, so you see many more scenes than just the primary.
Hirschauer is the associate curator of Italian and Spanish paintings at the National Gallery. She told the Associated Press that Piero's interpretations of Greek and Latin mythology also showcase his talent for storytelling.
We don't really know if he knew how to read or not. He probably could read Italian. He could read the vernacular, but we don't know for sure if he could read Latin. And that would have been the text primarily that would have given him these stories. So either he was a very good reader or he was a very good listener. So we don't know if he could actually read the stories or if the stories were just told to him.
The works in this show, 44 in all, follow di Cosimo's career, including the time late in his life when he came under the influence of the monk Savonarola and turned his attention to more sacred subjects. Dennis Geronimus says that Piero di Cosimo opened new ideas through his landscapes, his subject matter, and through training other artists.
One thing is certain, that he had a very active and wonderfully strange sense of fantasy, and that his imagination and the way that he imbued his paintings with, again, both the human and the divine, the everyday, and the extraordinary, the extraordinarily strange.
Piero di Cosimo, the poetry of painting in Renaissance art, occupies six galleries in the U.S. National Gallery of Art. It includes several of his altarpieces for Florentine churches, portraits, allegories, and paintings illustrating mythological themes. Some of these paintings have never been seen in the United States before. The exhibit runs through May the 3rd. To see some of the artworks, log on to www.nga.gov and click on their link. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrne.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. You know how crowded airplanes get these days?
Oh, I know. They're absolutely chock full. And, you know, you always have to obey the rules, too, like put your seat back in the upright position and wear your seatbelt.
Well, China's first budget carrier, Spring Airlines, is considering seeking permission to have passengers stand up during a flight in exchange for a lower price. There are some concerns through authorities of the problem of safety.
You think?
Just a bit.
It's time for sports on VOA Global. He's Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Boston will be delaying until Wednesday its parade to celebrate the New England Patriots Super Bowl victory after Mayor Marty Walsh decided on Monday to push the event back a day because a snowstorm happened to be pounding the city. The city had intended to host the parade on Tuesday, but heavy snowfall dropped as much as 14 inches or 36 centimeters on the city. You know what? I don't think they care. They're happy they won anyway.
Yeah, they would turn out anyway. U.S. judge Monday refused to accept the proposed settlement between the National Football League and thousands of retired players over concussions, saying some changes are needed before she would approve it. Ruling one day after the Super Bowl, U.S. District Judge Anita Brody in Philadelphia said the accord should expand payment eligibility for some players and families.
Rory McIlroy and his former agents will be returning to court Wednesday after lawyers for the world number one golfer asked for an adjournment as the two sides made progress that could potentially avoid an eight-week hearing. The four times major winner terminated his contract with Horizon Sports Management in September 2013 to form his own company. That prompted a protracted dispute, which forced McIlroy to take time away from the golf course and prepare for the case.
It is amazing how many sports stories are also news stories and have nothing to do with competition, like this next one. A group of PGA, Professional Golf Association Tour caddies, has filed a class action lawsuit demanding that the tour compensate them for wearing bibs. Well, 80 caddies joined the federal suit filed Tuesday in Northern California, an issue having to wear bibs that have the logo of the tournament sponsor. Caddies contend the PGA Tour is making $50 million a year off the sponsors, while the caddies get absolutely nothing.
FIFA Vice President Prince Ali bin al-Hussein disclosed Tuesday that the United States was among the national associations to nominate him to stand against Sepp Blatter for the top job as he decried a culture of intimidation within the governing body. The Jordanian was also endorsed for the May election by his home federation, Belarus, Malta, England, and Georgia, but his inability to gain widespread backing beyond his homeland in the Asian Football Confederation highlights the tough task of unseating Blatter. We'll see. That's sports on VOA Global.
This is our music segment on VOA Global with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. The American girl group Fifth Harmony has shot to number one on U.S. iTunes with their debut album, Reflection. Within minutes of its release, the girls hit the top spot. They've done so in over 20 countries already. Album just released. It's already number one. Featuring three gold-certified singles, including their latest chart hit, the Meghan Trainor penned Sledgehammer. Here it is.
If you could take my pulse right now. Sweat. My body's telling all the secrets I ain't told you yet. Oh, I swear.
Ira. You can really hear the Meghan Trainor influence in that song.
For sure. Sledgehammer by the Fifth Harmony. If you don't know much about the group, and if you're under the age of 20 or so, I guess you've heard everything about the group.
You probably know more than we do about them.
Well, yeah, but they're pretty good. They formed on the second season of the TV show X Factor. The group consists of members Ali Brooke Hernandez, Normani Corday, Dinah Jane Hansen, Camila Corbello, and Lauren Jorjui, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. What is amazing, Jim, is that how many top performers now have come from these competitive television programs.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, and they've started here. Well, they actually started in Great Britain, I believe, with American Idol. However, that's the way it is. I could have talked and talked and talked.
I know. Yeah. I know. But
no, because it really is. I mean, those TV shows.
They have spawned so many great artists who would have been really unrecognized otherwise.
Well, it's been very cold here in the Washington, D.C. area, especially in the New England area, the northeast portion of the United States. A couple of feet of snow. I have relatives in the Boston area that are still trying to dig out. A man who lives in Massachusetts is hoping to pocket some cold cash after he built an igloo in his back garden, and now he's offering it for rent. A man who's known only by his first name of Pierre has advertised the snow home on the holiday home rental website Airbnb, along with a mattress and floor covering. That's all you get.
That's all you need, right?
It was built in the wake of Storm Juno in the back garden of his house in Massachusetts. The igloo was listed for about $11 a night. Apparently has enough room to sleep two people, and the advertisement claims there are also toilet facilities available.
You know, in real estate, it used to be location, 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 and right now it's season, 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 because if it's summertime, it's not going to work too well.
Well, it appears the igloo is not the first to be offered on a website, but the others are in more traditionally snowy countries like Austria and Andorra. But not here.
Our igloo is rapidly melting. We better roll some credits.
I'm melting. our thanks to Greg Burns pushing the buttons. Tracy Carter is our director, and our dear leader is Diane.
Managing editor. Thank you, Diane.
We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right, I'm Ira Melvin. See you then. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.